A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He wants a practical guide to weaponizing customer service speak as a form of social trolling. The cool questions. How do you talk to your spouse and family as if they're on a support call? What other lines work in daily interactions? And how do you deliver all this with a straight face without breaking? He's basically asking for a field manual and turning your dinner table into a call center.
I love this because customer service speak is a genuinely weird linguistic artifact. It's a register that was engineered for one specific purpose, de-escalating frustrated strangers over the phone, and yet it's so universally recognizable that dropping it into a personal conversation creates instant cognitive dissonance. Your brain hears the intimacy of family and the cold procedural warmth of a support script at the same time and just short-circuits.
The cold procedural warmth, that's the phrase. It's warmth that's been run through a compliance department.
And that tension is where the humor lives. So let's define what we're working with here. Customer service speak has a few signature moves. You've got formulaic empathy. I understand your frustration. I can see why that would be upsetting. You've got procedural transparency. Let me look into that for you. I'm going to place you on a brief hold. And you've got this forced positivity that borders on the surreal. Thank you for your patience. Your call is very important to us. These phrases aren't designed to convey actual feeling. They're designed to signal that a process is underway.
Nobody saying, I understand your frustration, is sitting there feeling your frustration. They're reading line 4 of the de-escalation script while checking how long until their break.
Yet we all accept it because the context demands it. The magic trick Daniel's getting at is yanking that language out of context and dropping it somewhere it doesn't belong. Your wife asks what you want for dinner, and you say, I appreciate you bringing that to my attention. Let me look into available options and get back to you within 24 hours.
Which is objectively hilarious. But the question is why? What's the structural mechanism that makes this funny?
I think it's a category error. The brain has separate buckets for intimate speech and transactional speech. When you use transactional language in an intimate setting, neither bucket quite fits, and the result is this comedic uncanny valley. There's also a tension-diffusing function. Customer service scripts are built to absorb anger without reflecting it back. So when your spouse is annoyed about the socks on the floor and you respond with, I've logged your concern in our system, a resolution will be provided within 5 to 7 business days. You've reframed an emotional conflict as a procedural ticket.
You turned a fight into a bit, and once it's a bit, the anger has nowhere to land.
The script acts as what I'd call a linguistic firewall. It says, this interaction is low stakes and routinized, even though the context is screaming that it's high stakes and personal. The listener's brain can't reconcile the two, and laughter is often the release valve.
Let's get practical. If someone wants to deploy this at home, what are the core phrases they need in their arsenal?
I went through communities like r/callcenters and r/tales from call centers. These are massive repositories of real scripts and the absurdities that come with them. The phrases that keep surfacing as most recognizable are, I understand your frustration. Thank you for staying with me. Let me look into that for you. I appreciate your patience and the crown jewel of passive-aggressive customer service. I'm sorry you feel that way.
That last one is a weapon.
It's a thermonuclear device in the right context. I'm sorry you feel that way is widely considered the most passive-aggressive line in the entire customer service repertoire because it technically acknowledges the other person's emotions while taking zero responsibility for causing them. In a call center, it's used to deflect blame. At home, it's devastating. Your mother criticizes your cooking and you say, I appreciate your feedback. There's a documented case from one of those Reddit communities where someone used exactly that line and the argument just stopped cold because the mother had no idea how to respond to a script.
Because the script doesn't give her a conversational handhold. There's no obvious next move.
Arguments have a grammar. You say something critical, I defend myself, you counter, and so on. When you replace your half of that grammar with a support ticket response, the other person's conversational engine stalls. They're waiting for the emotional reaction that never comes.
Let's map this onto specific family scenarios. What's the customer service equivalent of, I love you?
I value your continued partnership. Or if you want to really commit, we appreciate you choosing us for your emotional support needs.
What's for dinner?
Can you please confirm the status of the evening meal request? I'm not seeing an update in the system.
Stop leaving your socks on the floor.
I've noticed a recurring issue with personal item storage. Would you like me to escalate this to management? And if they push back, you follow up with, I hear you, and I want to make this right. Let me take ownership of this issue.
Take ownership is beautiful, because it's so aggressively corporate, while sounding like you're being helpful.
That's the whole trick. These phrases are engineered to sound helpful while actually just buying time or deflecting. Let me take ownership of this issue. Doesn't mean I'm going to fix it. It means I'm acknowledging it exists, and I'll get back to you.
The socks remain on the floor, but now they have a case number.
And that's the knock-on effect. Once you assign a case number to a domestic dispute, you've created a running bit that can last for weeks. Every time the socks appear, you just reference the ticket. I see ticket number 472 is still open. I'll follow up with the relevant department.
Daniel also asked about using this outside the home. Public interactions, colleagues, strangers. What changes when you take the script on the road?
The stakes change because you lose the shared context. Your spouse knows you're not actually a customer service representative. A barista might not. So the key is calibration. With a friend who's rambling, a deadpan, your call is very important to us. Lands beautifully because they know you're doing a bit. With a stranger, you need to read the room.
There's a social pressure test embedded in this, isn't there?
This technique is a surprisingly effective tool for gauging social compatibility. People who laugh or play along signal they understand the absurdity of both the script and the situation. They get that language can be performative and that performance can be funny. People who get offended or confused reveal they take themselves, or the interaction, very seriously. It's a low-stakes litmus test for whether someone shares your sense of humor.
It's trolling as compatibility screening.
Which is arguably the most useful kind. You're not being mean, you're creating an opportunity for a shared joke. If they take it, you've found your people. If they don't, you've learned something.
What about workplace applications? I imagine there's a fine line between being funny and getting a meeting with HR.
The workplace is where this gets delicate. The Reddit communities are full of cautionary tales, but there are lower risk applications. In a meeting where someone is going on too long, thank you for that detailed update. I'm going to summarize what I'm hearing to make sure I've captured everything correctly is functionally identical to what a good manager would say anyway. The trolling is in the delivery, the slightly too even tone, the barely perceptible pause before responding.
You're technically saying something appropriate while performing it as a script.
That's the art. The words themselves are defensible. It's the register that does the trolling. And that's important because customer service speak is unique among corporate jargons. Corporate speak, synergy, circle back, low-hanging fruit, that's about signaling efficiency and insider status. Customer service speak is about emotional pacification. It's designed to be heard by frustrated people. It has a built-in calm-down subtext.
Which is why it's so much more potent for trolling. You're not just using annoying language. You're using language that was specifically engineered to manage someone else's emotions while pretending not to.
That's what makes it ripe for satire. The whole register is a mask for corporate indifference. When you use it with someone you actually care about, you're exposing the absurdity of the mask by wearing it in a context where it obviously doesn't belong. It's a form of critique that doesn't require a lecture. You just perform the thing and let the dissonance do the work.
Let's talk about delivery. Daniel specifically asked about maintaining a straight face. This seems like the hardest part.
It is the hardest part. The entire bit collapses the moment you smile or laugh. The trolling works because the listener is unsure whether you're serious. That moment of uncertainty, is this a joke or is my spouse having a stroke? That's where the comedy lives. If you break, you've answered the question and the tension dissipates.
How do you not break?
I'm not joking. You practice in the mirror. You deliver, I understand your frustration, with the same flat affect you'd use to read a weather report. You learn to detach your facial muscles from whatever amusement you're feeling internally. It's a skill like any other. Improv actors train for this constantly.
There's something almost meditative about it. You're observing your own amusement without acting on it.
and the more you practice, the more you can sustain the bit. Start with one line per day in a low-stakes interaction. Someone waits 5 seconds for you to grab your keys. Thank you for your patience. That's it. You're not making a scene. You're just dropping a pebble in a pond and watching the ripples.
If they call you on it.
That's where Daniel's third question gets interesting. How do you employ this delicately and consistently? One approach is to create a customer service persona. Give it a name. Dave from support. When you're in character, you're Dave. When you're not, you're you. This does two things. It helps you maintain the bit because you've externalized it. It's not you being weird, it's Dave being Dave. And it gives you an exit strategy. Sorry, Dave is off the clock now.
That's practical. You've created a container for the behavior so it doesn't bleed into everything.
It signals to the other person that this is a performance. Once they know about Dave, they can even request Dave. Can you get Dave on the line? I have a complaint about the garbage not being taken out.
Now the trolling has become collaborative. You're both in on it.
Which is the ideal outcome. The goal here isn't to alienate people, it's to create a shared language of absurdity. Daniel called this social trolling, and I think that's right, but it's trolling in the gentlest sense, the kind where the target is supposed to eventually laugh with you.
The target is the script itself, not the person.
You're trolling the corporate language, the emotional fakery, the whole performative apparatus of customer service. The person you're talking to is your co-conspirator, whether they know it yet or not.
I want to push on something. You said earlier that this exposes corporate indifference. Is there a risk that using this language at home actually imports that indifference into your relationships? That you start sounding like you actually don't care?
That's a fair question. I think the risk is real if you overuse it or use it in sensitive moments. If your spouse is telling you about a real problem and you respond with, "I've logged your concern," you're not trolling, you're being a jerk. The technique requires discernment. You deploy it when the stakes are low and the absurdity is high, not when someone needs actual empathy.
It's a spice, not a meal.
You don't replace all your communication with customer service scripts. You sprinkle them in where they'll create the maximum comedic effect with the minimum emotional damage. The sibling argument about chores? A serious conversation about finances? Not the time.
What about text? Does this work differently over messages?
Text is interesting because you lose the vocal delivery but gain the ability to really commit to the format. You can send an actual support ticket. Dear valued household member, this message is to confirm that your request regarding dishwasher loading procedures has been received and assigned ticket number 881. Current estimated resolution time is 3 to 5 business days. We appreciate your patience and thank you for being a loyal member of the household.
The formal email format adds a whole other layer. The salutation alone, dear valued household member, is comedy gold.
Text gives you time to compose. You're not under pressure to deliver the line in real time with a straight face. You can craft the perfect response, hit send, and then laugh as much as you want.
For beginners, text might be the training wheels.
Start with text, graduate to one-liners in person, work your way up to full customer service calls at the dinner table.
I'm now imagining someone taking this to its logical extreme, answering the phone when their partner calls with, "Thank you for calling the Johnson household. This is Dave speaking. How can I provide you with excellent service today?"
If you can do that without laughing, you have achieved mastery. There's a story from one of the call center subreddits about someone who did exactly this, answered their personal phone in full customer service mode when their roommate called. The roommate hung up and called back thinking they'd dialed the wrong number.
That's the level we're aspiring to. The double take.
The double take is the trophy. When someone has to physically pause and recalibrate because their brain cannot process what just happened, you've won.
Let's talk about some of the more advanced phrases. We covered the basics. What are the deep cuts? The lines that only someone who's really studied the form would recognize.
I want to make sure I'm fully understanding your concern. That's a classic stalling technique dressed up as active listening. Let me escalate this to our specialist team, which in a domestic context means absolutely nothing, and that's the point. I'm going to place you on a brief hold while I research this further, and then you just stand there silently.
The silent hold in person is deeply unsettling. I've seen it done. Someone asks you a question, and you just maintain eye contact in complete silence for 5 seconds before responding.
It's powerful because we're so conditioned to fill silences. When you create an intentional silence and frame it as a hold, you've weaponized the pause. Thank you for holding. I've looked into your question about whether we have any milk left, and I can confirm that we do not.
There's another dimension here that I think is worth exploring. As AI chatbots become more prevalent, the line between human customer service and automated responses is blurring. Half the time when you're chatting with support now, you're not sure if you're talking to a person or a bot.
That creates a fascinating new application for this technique. Using customer service speak ironically might become a way to signal, "I'm not a bot," or, conversely, to troll actual bots by responding to them in their own language.
The bot-on-bot trolling meta.
Imagine getting a customer service chatbot and responding entirely in customer service scripts. "I understand your frustration with my request. Let me look into available options for clarifying my issue. Thank you for your patience as we work through this together."
The chatbot's training data probably just loops.
There's something satisfying about the idea of turning the script back on the system that created it. It's the linguistic equivalent of holding a mirror up to a mirror.
We've covered the home, the workplace, public interactions, text, and the bot. What's the unifying theory here? What makes this whole thing tick?
I think it comes back to what we said at the start. Customer service speak is a performance that everyone recognizes, but nobody designed for genuine human connection. It's a facade of care built on a foundation of process. When you transplant that facade into a setting where actual care is expected, you create a gap between what the language promises and what the context demands. That gap is where the humor lives.
The trolling is ultimately affectionate. You're not mocking the person you're talking to. You're mocking the language itself and inviting them to join you in seeing how absurd it is.
The best social trolling exposes the gap between what something claims to be and what it actually is. Customer service speak claims to be empathetic and helpful. What it actually is, most of the time, is a delay tactic wrapped in politeness. Using it at home just makes that visible in a way that's funny instead of infuriating.
For someone who wants to start doing this tomorrow, and I suspect Daniel is already composing his first support ticket to Anna, what's the one piece of advice you'd give?
Start small, stay deadpan, and remember that you're Dave from support, not yourself. If you can deliver... "Thank you for bringing that to my attention. Without cracking a smile when someone points out you forgot to buy toothpaste, you're on your way."
If you break.
Then you laugh, you admit the bit, and you try again tomorrow. The stakes could not be lower. That's the beauty of it. This is trolling where the worst-case scenario is that someone thinks you're a little weird for 30 seconds.
Which, for most of our listeners, is probably already the baseline.
I value your continued listenership.
Thank you for staying with us. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1880s, the British research vessel, HMS Challenger, discovered a species of deep-sea starfish on a seamount near the Solomon Islands that was declared extinct in 1962 when its habitat was destroyed by a submarine volcanic eruption, only for a living specimen to be photographed by a remotely operated vehicle at a depth of 1,400 meters in 2024.
The starfish just waited out extinction at the bottom of the ocean for 62 years.
I respect that.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flemingtop for making this show happen. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon with whatever Daniel sends us next. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Your ticket has been resolved.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. Until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.